My name is Rabbi Nathan Gamedze, formerly of Tzfas, now living in Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem. We find ourselves in days that are very conducive to getting closer to Hashem. Our holy rabbis tell us that they quote a verse from Navi, Yeshayahu, Dilshu Hashem behimotzoi, seek out Hashem when he can be found. Kra'u biyosei kol, call out to him when he is near. And they say, when are those days? Those are the 10 days that we find ourselves in, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So therefore, there's a very special siyata dishmai, there's a very special heavenly help, assistance to those that want to get closer to a Kodesh Baruch. I'm going to be telling a bit about my own story, a lot about my own story, but also adding in Torah Hashkofa, Torah outlook. Things that happen in our lives, we have to look at them in a certain way. There's a certain way of reading. And unfortunately, so many of us today find it very difficult to know what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants of our lives, and how he's running our lives, and how to best serve him. There is a pasuk that we say in davening, Ashrei. We say, Koyv Hashem Lechol Koyov. Hashem is close to all those that call upon him. Lechol Asher Yikra'uhu Be'emes. All those that call upon him in truth. As we may know, it's very easy to call out to Hashem. It's very easy to cry out in pain, in need. But how many of us cry out because we want to be truly close to a Kodesh Baruch? In his famous work called Derech Hashem, the Ramchal writes that, of Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, that the whole aim of mankind is to cling to Hashem. So therefore, when I'm talking about closeness to Hashem, I'm actually talking about everything, because this is what we came here for. And I feel that we often lose perspective. Life has got so many trials and tribulations that we're so busy trying to get over the next hurdle that we forget, we don't see the wider picture of why we're actually here. And that everything that we do, everything that our whole direction in life should be about getting closer to Hashem. Now with that as a backdrop, you can see how the days that we're really sitting on a gold mine between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I would say that I was brought up in circumstances in Swazi royalty, Southern Africa, circumstances that were hardly conducive to becoming a Jew. Number one, there were simply no Jews around. Those that did come were from South Africa and they were businessmen. They weren't particularly frum people. And also, when a person has what the physical world has to offer, wealth, servants, honor, many people would think, this is it. I'm happy, I don't have worries, I'm staying here and I'm not budging, being complacent. There was a certain rabbi I knew many years ago. He used to say, there are no helicopters in Judaism. In other words, you're either going up or you're going down. One of the ways that the evil inclination, the Yetzirah, tries to trip us up is to get us complacent. If you're complacent, then you're not going to fight, you're not going to struggle, and you're not going to enter into his territory. You're going to keep the status quo. But is this what a person came into this life to do, just to keep the status quo? The Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, says we find ourselves in this world in a great milchama, a very serious war. What this really means is that a person who doesn't find themselves at war basically has not comprehended the situation in which they find themselves. I'll talk a bit later on about this war. I just want to get on with certain parts of my story, which I think show a great deal of Hashgacha, of Hashem's providence, in a very clear way. As I said, being born with what most people yearn for from this life, it would appear as if I'd reached the top, but I knew that I still felt a yearning for something much greater. I didn't feel accomplished. I felt a hunger, a search for truth. I felt it's ridiculous, you know. So few people in this world have it, in inverted commas. By far, the vast majority of humanity is suffering from disease and are dying. By far, the vast majority of humanity. So it's quite obvious that there's much more going on in this world than meets the eye. And I said to myself, how can it be that we come into this world, we're born, we grow up, we go to school, we get married, have children, they grow up, we grow older, then one generation goes and a new generation comes in. The question begs to be asked, what's all this about? Why do we need it? We find ourselves on a roller coaster. I mean, I'm sure we just come from Rosh Hashanah. I'm sure most of us are surprised that it's already Thursday. What? Another Shabbos coming along? It was just Shabbos just a few days ago. That's how time works. And before you know it, it's over. What does this mean? It does not meant to make people morose, sad. It's meant to make people aware that they have to use their time wisely because it's something that is fleeting. I would say I was like a detective. I knew that there was a much larger story, a bigger picture than what met the naked eye. And I said, I have to find out what this is. I wanted the truth, no matter how it looked. The reason I add that, no matter what it looked like, is because many people are searching, but some people fool themselves because they are searching for something which will please them, which will make them comfortable. But truth is not like that. Truth is simply the way that it is. It can be comfortable, it can be very uncomfortable. So Hashem is seeking somebody who wants to know the truth and is not trying to fool himself or herself. And Baruch Hashem, this was the kind of situation that I found myself in, at least at my level. And we know that Hashem acts measure for measure. This is a great thing. This is a great thing because it helps us keep in step with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with Hashem and His absolute will. Especially now since we don't have prophecy yet. It hasn't been renewed. With prophecy, Imamish had a telephone line where a person's told exactly what Hashem wants. But here we have measure for measure where Hashem interacts, where Hashem plays back, acts, he interacts with us. The way whatever we do, he does back. So if you act in truth and you want to get close to Hashem, then Hashem makes himself accessible. And anyone who's not acting that way, Hashem is not so accessible. It sounds very simple. It is. But it gets complicated by other factors. For example, trials, tests. Trials and tests very often test this very thing about Hashem acting measure for measure. A very good example is the Akedah, which we'll talk about in a second, which was one of the big things in my life which brought me to Judaism. And we'll see how this tested sorely all that Avraham Avinu knew about the Kodesh Baruch Hu, what he understood of the Divine. I went to university in South Africa, Johannesburg, studied languages, amongst them German, Italian, and French. Now look at the interesting way that divine providence works. I was sitting in what I found to be a rather boring Italian class. Now what do people do when they're bored? It's one of two options. Either they schlof, or they start looking around to see if someone's doing something more interesting. I picked the second option and I started looking around myself, and I saw someone writing in a strange script that I'd never seen before, from right to left. And I asked myself, I said, what's he doing? That really looks interesting. I thought, imagine if I could write like that. So after class, I went up to him and I said, tell me something. What were you doing over there? He said, I was doing my Hebrew homework. He said, Hebrew homework? I also want to study Hebrew. Yeah, just like that. Who would have thought that this seemingly chance occurrence? Up to this day, I thank Hashem that I didn't sleep in class. up to this day, I mean, who'd have thought that a chance occurrence, what looks like a chance occurrence, nothing is chance in this world, of turning to my side to see what somebody else is doing. I don't advise you to do that. That is something that changed my life tremendously, drastically. I would never have known it at that moment. Off I go to the Hebrew class. I'm accepted. I start studying the various verb patterns. I don't know how many of you do, but study verb patterns and noun patterns, binyanim, hitpael, pl, pu'ah, all that stuff, Hebrew. And on the outset, it just looked like, you know, another language. Nothing so fantastic. But after about half a year through our studies, we had language laboratory sessions. Now, in these language laboratory sessions, like in the Hebrew language laboratory session, we had a native Israeli instructor helping us with comprehension of text and understanding them, and pronunciation, sorry. And the first text we had, I remember we were listening to this cassette, and in the background was Yemenite music, highly reminiscent of camels in the desert. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I hear the following voice, following words in Sephardic Hebrew. Vayhi achar hadavarim ha'ele, ve'elokim nisa et Avraham v'yomer elav. Avraham, v'yomer hineni, v'yomer kachna et bincha et yechidcha asher ahavte et yitzchak, ve'lech lecha el eretz ha'moriah, ve'aleh usham le'ola al achad he'arim asher omar elecha. Those words, Loshon HaKodesh, are words where Hashem is asking of Avraham Avinu to bring his son up as a sacrifice. Now, this was a dilemma. Anywhere that Avraham Avinu would look, there was trouble. Let's say he has the guts and he does what the will of Hashem is. What's everybody going to say? He'd been telling people that Hashem is not interested in what the idol worshippers did in those days, that they'll sacrifice their children to their whatever, to their deity. And he also, and Hashem had promised Avraham Avinu that it was going to be through Yitzchak that he's going to get children, that the Jewish people would come about. Now, all of that, with one command from Hashem, seems to be totally wiped out of the picture. What's going to be now? There are several lessons to learn from this, and there are several lessons that I learned from this particular passage. The first thing, in service of Hashem, one has to nullify one's own agenda. Even if that agenda is a kosher agenda. I think many people have traveled because they feel, look, I am living in a framework of Torah and mitzvahs. So why should Hashem have further demands on my time? After all, I keep Shabbos, I keep kosher, Yom Tov and everything, davening three times a day. What more does he want from me? But there's much more to Judaism than that. Nullifying one's agenda before Hashem's agenda and showing a certain quality that it takes to follow through with Hashem. In other words, just to nullify your own agenda to Hashem's agenda doesn't take you the whole way. You need something else. Every Jew needs another component here. And what is that? In Hebrew we call it Mesirut Nefesh. Mesirut Nefesh is a very difficult word to translate. It basically means giving your all, giving absolutely everything about yourself in order to pursue that agenda, that very divine agenda. I'll give you an example from Avraham Avinu again. There's a midrash that talks about that when he was going to do the Akedah, when he was going to put his son up as a sacrifice, the Satan came in all kinds of ways to try and prevent it. And one of them is that he made like a serious waterfall that was in the way. So a person might think, what? Must be that Hashem has changed his mind, doesn't want me to sacrifice my son. But Avraham Avinu remembered, I'd passed this way before and there was no such thing like that. And he just went through. He was totally committed to doing the will of Hashem, sacrificing his son, and he wasn't looking back and waiting for Hashem to change his mind or to give him further instruction. He knew exactly what was needed. Now these two qualities, which I'll keep in Hebrew because I've already tried to translate them, because they really give the essence of what was going on here. This business of self-nullification, hisbatlus they call it in Hebrew, nullifying one's own agenda to Hashem's, and the second, mesirus nefesh, are two things that I understood from Akedas Yitzchak, from the binding of Isaac. And I said, Avraham Avinu was the founder of the Jewish people, the father of the Jewish people, Avia Uma Yisraelit. Strangely enough, I felt that this very story was speaking to me. It felt familiar in some way that I couldn't quite comprehend. I felt myself being drawn into this reality, and I wanted to find out more about it. This was a story, I felt, that was not so much about something that happened to somebody else, but something that happened to me. This is how I felt. I said, I have to find out what's going on. You know, very often, certain times in our lives, Hashem opens up a window where you have a chance to see the reality, what's really going on. But that window is not open forever. One of the things that surprises me, or that keeps me in wonder, is not meant to scare you off, but it's really the difficulty involved requires a person give their all. We're all here to break our own spiritual records, do better than we've ever done before. What I call being a spiritual athlete. So, from the day I came up upon the binding of Isaac, Akedas Yitzchak, I started reading all texts that I could find written in Lashon HaKodesh, written in the holy language of Hebrew. I felt a need to read more and more. Soon enough, I came across the Mishneh Torah of Maimonides, codification of Jewish law by Maimonides. And I started reading through the various halachot, the various laws there, and I felt an inner yearning to read more and more. I was just lapping up this knowledge, which seemingly had nothing to do with me. At university, I had Jewish friends, and I started telling them about Maimonides. Oh, that was the only kesher, that was the only connection I had with Jews. So I said, look, yeah, Maimonides says this and that, you know. And my friends started getting interested. Slowly but surely, they made their way back to their own tradition. Before I left Johannesburg to come and study in Israel, my friends had already kashered up their kitchen and were shomer Shabbos, and I said, kol hakavod. I said, this is fantastic. From them, I learned something very important. And that is that truth obligates the one who hears it. Truth is the most precious commodity we have. And it obligates the one who hears it. And my friends did a 180-degree turn. They simply turned around and started living their lives differently in accordance with Jewish law. Obviously, we can see that humility is a characteristic that is very much needed if a person is to follow through with the will of Hashem. They have to be humble. To simply drop everything and say, Hashem, I'm coming, means basically that up until now I wasn't really doing anything. It's only now when I'm doing the will of Hashem that my life is really taking off. So I saw my friends becoming more frum, but I thought to myself, what's this got to do with me? Then I was a non-Jew. All of these things didn't apply to me. So I thought, well, very nice. And I continued with my studies. One day, a professor comes up to me. I was having a cup of coffee at the restaurant at the university. He comes up to me and he says, I see you got very high marks in Hebrew. I say, yeah. He says, look, if you want, I can organize a scholarship for you to study for a PhD at the Hebrew University in Hebrew language. I looked at him. I said, what? Hebrew language at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. I thought to myself, what do I know about Israel? I said, well, I know that there's desert, camels, Bedouin, that it's a pretty hot place. I thought, sounds pretty boring to me. Obviously a very primitive understanding of what Israel was or is. I didn't know any better then, but Baruch Hashem, I had read a few Midrashic texts on Avraham Avinu. Nothing's by chance, and it's certainly not by chance that converts to Judaism, if they're men, they're called Bnei Avraham Avinu, sons of Avraham Avinu. If they're women, they're called Bnois Avraham Avinu, the daughters of Avraham Avinu. What's this kesher, what's this connection to Avraham Avinu? Because the way that they choose to take is the way of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, in the Parshas Lech Lecha, he is told to leave everything behind, his home, his homeland, his father's house, and to go to the land that I will show you, which is the land of Israel. He's told to leave everything. How many people, we all have our own Avraham Avinu situations. How many people, especially those of us who don't come from religious backgrounds, how many people are prepared to leave the world that they come from and to embrace Torah Judaism completely? There's a big Yetzer Hara to try and pick and choose. But really, when you're dealing with Hashem's agenda, it's an absolute one. It doesn't deal in bits and pieces. So I understood from Chazal that Avraham Avinu got to know the Creator at the age of 3. What happened after that? We see that Hashem takes him out of his natural environment and takes him to the land of Israel. That was quite a while after that. And I said, here I have an opportunity to go to Israel myself. At that time, I wasn't aware that it would mean leaving all my past behind. As far as I was concerned, I was just going to Israel. I was just following the path leading me closer to Hashem, leading me closer to the truth. I come to Israel, I go to the university, I start studying Aramaic, Biblical Hebrew, Mishnaic Hebrew, and I think to myself, this is fun, but what am I going to do with Aramaic? Who speaks it? Little did I know that the languages that I was learning, that there would come a time when I would actually need them. Aramaic to study Gemara, Mishnaic Hebrew to study the writings of Chazal, our rabbis, blessed memory, and Biblical Hebrew to study Tanakh. Little did I know that Hashem was preparing a path for me right there. In fact, this type of anhaga, this type of running things is the way that Hashem does things. He always prepares us for what's going to be in the future. And this is true also with the trials and tribulations that we have along the way, that we always have if we exercise maximum effort and give and have mesirus nefesh, we always have what it takes to overcome the hurdle. I always think that a Jew's middle name should be mesirus nefesh, because it's such an important quality, without which you can be the wisest person, without which you cannot proceed. From where you are standing, the next step always looks impossible. That's just the nature of it. It always looks impossible. Anyway, I didn't find the spirituality that I had found in the Akedas Yitzchak and Maimonides. I didn't find that at university. I have, obviously, Hakara Satov. I have gratitude for the ways in which Hashem chose to bring me closer to Judaism. But I soon realized that at university, it wasn't giving me that dimension of truth that I had been searching for. And I really didn't know how to proceed. There's one thing in the spiritual path. If you have gone along a certain journey, following Hashem, and all of a sudden you find yourself stuck, you can't move, then don't move. Wait until Hashem shows you where to go. Don't start pressing panic buttons. It's a klal in the Torah. Shev va'al ta'aseh adif. Sit and don't do anything, that's better. If you don't know what's going on and things look like they've reached a crisis point, wait for Hashem to reveal the next step. The next step was, 2 years along the line, I get a phone call from friends of mine from Johannesburg. They tell me that they're coming to study at a yeshiva in Yerushalayim and that they'd like to see me. So obviously I agreed. Now these were these two friends that had come back to their Judaism through the reading of Maimonides. I go to the yeshiva, I see all these rabbis with their black hats and long beards. I see these young men with their black yarmulkes and tzitzit. I'd enter into a totally new world. I see all kinds of movements that I really didn't know what was going on. People going like this, like this. Where am I? A totally new world. And I see people shouting at each other at the top of their lungs. And I think, oh, there's going to be a fight any second. And then they sit down and continue learning as if nothing has happened. Wow. I felt a great energy there that I can't describe. I see my friends and they invite me for dinner. And they ask me an interesting question. They say, how do you explain that a non-Jew brings Jewish people closer to their tradition? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, when we were back in Johannesburg, you used to tell us about Maimonides. And that was our first step back into getting interested in Judaism. And now we study in yeshiva and keep Torah and mitzvah. I thought, didn't know what to say. Baruch Hashem, they've grown up, they have their own children, Torah, observant families. Really, when I see how far they've come, it always gives me great nachas to see what a person can reach from a totally different place, coming from a totally different place. They ask me another question. They say, would you ever consider converting to Judaism? I tell them, I say, well, it's only if I couldn't sleep at night. Now, that seems like a pretty strange thing to say. The truth of the matter was that I was in a kind of quandary. I said, Hashem, look, I have a great longing and love for Judaism. So why was I born non-Jewish? If you wanted me to be part of this tradition, I should have been born a Jew. So I felt that, in a way, like I was a fish longing to be a horse.
And I thought, look, I started analyzing the situation. I said, look, you know, here you are in Israel. You're in a Jewish milieu. You're at university where just about everybody's Jewish. And obviously when you visit friends in yeshiva, they're all Jewish. I said, look, how do you expect to be able to find yourself in this type of, you know, this type of situation? So you're better off going out into the non-Jewish world, and there you'll be able to sort out your life again. This to me sounded like good advice. I left Israel and I went to Rome. When I arrived in Rome, I breathed a sigh of relief. I said, Baruch Hashem, now I'll be able to live my life. I've left the Yidden behind. All you have there are priests and nuns running up and down. I said, fine, now I'll be able to get on with my life. I enter, of course I can't do it anymore, but I enter into St. Peter's. I see all the great artwork, sculpture, things that I'd read about in Italian literature. And I start thinking about the Roman Empire that ruled all over the world. But slowly but surely, I started also thinking about things that had happened to the Jewish people over those periods. I thought of the Crusades, the Inquisition, auto da fe, Jewish people being burnt at the stake simply because they wanted to remain Jewish. And I thought of what a Jew does when he gives his life for the sanctification of Hashem's name, when he says Shema Yisrael. And I thought of Jews in their hundreds and hundreds of thousands giving up their lives with the holy words of the Shema on their lips. I went to my hotel room. It was the first time in my life I did anything Jewish. I covered over my eyes and I said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And I felt an enormous surge of energy. It was as if those very Jews who had given up their lives were joining in to say Shema, joining into my voice to say Shema Yisrael. And I thought to myself, what's this got to do with me? Why is this happening to me? There's actually something I want to share that I don't think I've shared before at this in this particular forum. But the strangeness of how I came to Yiddishkeit actually was borne out by something which happened a few years ago. Bezras Hashem, I hope you have time to say a few words about that. Anyway, I say, look, I don't care, you're emotionally involved over here. Leave Judaism alone. Continue with your life. I continue touring Rome. This is usually one of the things now that I'm going to say, which is very difficult. It's very difficult because it's very difficult to believe on one hand. But things that happen, happen. There are quite a few things in my life that have shown so clearly the hand of Hashem that it's almost as if my will, at least for that moment, my own Bechira had been taken away because it was so obvious who was running the show. So the story goes like this. One day I come down from my room to eat. In front of me there's a plate of pasta and a fork. I lift up my fork to eat. I bring the food to my mouth. I don't put it in. I replace the fork, pick it up again, bring the food to my mouth, don't put it in, replace the fork. This procedure repeats itself about 3 or 4 times. And I ask myself, I say, why aren't you eating? Don't tell me it's because the food's not kosher. What's that got to do with you? As a non-Jew, you can eat whatever you want. Nonetheless, there was something that was troubling me. And I thought of the time when I was in Johannesburg. There was one day when my Jewish friends wouldn't eat anything the whole day. They would just stay at home and wait until after sunset. And after sunset, they'd go out to buy food. When I was in their presence, I also felt that, I don't know, something disturbed me and I wouldn't eat. And we'd all wait together and then go out after sunset to buy food. I said to myself, tell me, do you think it could be this very day? Forget about it. That's already what they call Boba Mises. I said, forget about it. There's got to be some logical reason as to why you're not eating. And I pushed the whole business out of my head. But then all of a sudden I remembered, I said, just a second. When did you actually leave Eretz Israel? And I remember that it was shortly after Rosh Hashanah. It was during these days. I said, whoa, just a second. You have to check this out. So I go to my hotel room. I take out my Hebrew calendar that I brought from Israel and I start counting the days. And I put my finger on the day that it was and I see it surrounded with a blue square. And I couldn't believe what my eyes saw. What it said there was Yom Kippur. And I thought, I must be losing my mind. I go out of the hotel and go to the Jewish quarter, into the first shul I can find. I see Jews wearing their white prayer shawls, talesim, davening.
And I'm shaking and sweating and asking myself, how could it be that I could have felt the holiest day in the Jewish calendar? What possible logical explanation? I don't know where the merit comes from for that. After the services, I go outside and I do what we call something we should all be doing during these days, cheshbon nefesh, a spiritual accounting of how I'd been behaving, my search for truth, and finding myself all of a sudden faced up with Judaism. And I say, look, I turn to Hashem and I say, I know that Judaism is true, and I know the Jewish people are your people. I now accept upon myself to go back to Israel and to convert to Judaism. It wouldn't be easy, but I knew that it was the truth. And just like I had said before, does a person want the truth, or do they want something that's going to make them comfortable? I said, no, Hashem, I want the truth. I came back to Israel, I converted to Judaism. I just want to share a bit about what happened at the Beis Din, the rabbinical court. They asked me why I wanted to be a Jew. Don't I know that Jewish people suffer and are persecuted? And I told them and I said, I quoted a verse from Tehillim Ayin Gimel, Va'ani kilvas Elokim litov. For me, the closeness to Hashem is good. I want to be as close as I possibly can to Hashem. And I know that the Jewish people are the ones that are closest. And that's how I converted to Judaism. I've never looked back since. I've been studying in the world of yeshivas because I wanted my whole outlook on life, my whole value system to be Jewish and to have no outside influence. I know time is going. I just want to share something which happened after I met up with my family after many years of absence. I learned a story that I didn't know before. I come from a pretty strong Christian background, Protestant background. My father says that before he saw his children, before he met up with his children, when they were born, he had already given them names. So I am the last of the boys, 4 sons and 2 girls. And he says that when he came up to see my mom after I was born, of course this has to be taken with a pinch of salt, but he said a heavenly voice came out to him and said, that's not his name. I'm going to give him a name. And that name was Emmanuel. And my dad was baffled. He says, but that's the name for Yoshka. How can I give him that name? I said, well, God spoke and said, his name is Emmanuel. That's the end of the story. Now, when I was learning Hebrew in South Africa, all of us were given Hebrew names. This was before I converted. And what did I do? I simply translated my Zulu name into Hebrew. Little did I know that the original name I was given was actually the Hebrew. It's almost like right from when I was a child, Hashem had already singled me out. And then my life started to make sense, the whole journey to Judaism and why I felt so different. And I just thanked Hashem, you know. All of this took place in about a period of about 20 years. And I just thanked Hashem that I was able to, that He revealed this knowledge to me. It was almost saying, you know, you've always been mine. Don't think that it was simply you making your decisions. I was guiding you throughout your life to make sure that you make it back home. Baruch Hashem, here we've got Jewish souls, people that were born Jewish, and we all have our paths to go through. One thing that I would want to do is encourage people, just like in the words that Hashem said to Yehoshua bin Nun as he was taking over the leadership of Klal Yisrael from Moshe Rabbeinu. He said again and again, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous. And that is really what we need, because all the time, our spiritual calling and what we're supposed to do seems way beyond our powers. But if you think just Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous, then you'll see that Hashem will be there for you and you'll come through. Thank you very much.